Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Heyo, everybody. Welcome into episode 120 of the Open Mic Podcast. It's your host, Brett Allen, your host with the most. It is great to be here with you on this beautiful Bay Area Monday. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. I know I did. Spent some amazing time with my son, and I talk about that a lot. We just had a fantastic and amazing time. It was raining all weekend, but it was still super chill. We had fun. We went to the park. We played outside. And of course, every weekend that I spend with him, I typically take public transportation, and we took the train. We were heading back to San Jose this past weekend, and I tell you, my son has the most dynamic and amazing personality. I have to say, it's just hilarious sometimes. Some of the things that he says to people and the way he talks to people. But there was this woman on the train that was sitting behind us, and my son was playing peekaboo with him. It's cool that he still does it even at age four, but it was just so adorable to watch him play. And this lady, she kept peeking around the chair. And it's almost like he knew what she was doing and he was playing into it. I know that it kind of sounds funny when I describe it, but I just love him. And it was a lot of fun watching them go back and forth. He just has such a joyous spirit. And he turns five this year, as I mentioned. It's hard to believe he's getting so big and growing up. But anyway, thanks to everybody who listens and joins in to the show every week when we release episodes. I've talked about this before. We have some amazing guests lined up, and today we have a fantastic one, Meredith Missoni. I'm excited to talk to her. She is a YouTube superstar, Instagram superstar of That's Inappropriate. You've seen her videos. You've seen her Instagram posts, all of her stories. Well, we've got her. We have an exclusive with her today, and I am super stoked to talk to her. So I'm going to stop talking now, and we'll bring Meredith on the line. Meredith, welcome into the Open Mic Podcast today. It's good to have you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm very excited to chat with you. I've been a huge fan of your videos and your blog as a single dad for a really long time. So this is definitely going to be a fun conversation for sure. So anyway, I know recently you shared on social media just sort of retelling your story about how all of this started for you. If you wouldn't mind just kind of turning back the clock for our listeners a little bit and just letting us know how this all got started and what led you to the blog and to the podcast and your YouTube channel and that.
Oh, geez. So it's crazy to think that this started back in 2014. Sometimes I forget the date. A lot of times I forget the date and what day it is. But the whole reason that this started was I felt stuck in my life. And I felt like I had lost myself as a person mm-hmm. in parenting and marriage and everything that was going on. So I felt kind of like I was playing hide and seek. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I used to be a person. I just didn't know who that was anymore. And it was kind of scary and kind of depressing and all of these things wrapped up in one. And so my husband, my loving husband, basically told me, you need a hobby. your problem is you don't have a hobby. And it's like, yeah, I don't know why I don't have any hobbies. Maybe because I'm working full time and taking care of the kids and taking care of you and taking care of the house. But yeah, let's get a hobby. So I started working out because mm-hmm. I thought that that was the hobby that I needed. And I ended up getting sick. And for the longest time, I couldn't figure out why I was having, I've always had awful acid reflux. I mean, even when mm-hmm. I was a kid, but it started getting worse and I started having all of these weird symptoms. And after a year of dealing with these really weird symptoms, I decided to go to the doctor because I couldn't figure out what it was. Like I had lost weight. So I thought maybe it was because I was working out, but then like my hair started falling out.
Oh, wow.
It was very weird stuff. I couldn't sleep laying down anymore. I was sleeping in a chair because my acid reflux was so bad. So I went to a doctor. The doctor looked at me and was like, "You're the picture of health. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Look," I think he even said, "Look how pretty you are," which is oh, wow. an awful thing for, it's like, oh.
yeah, not okay. very good bedside manner.
Okay. I would say. so he gave me more acid reflux medication and offered me, you know, he said, "Maybe you should talk to your doctor about depression." And I was like, okay, I'm fine with having that conversation, but I'm sick. Like there's something wrong with me. And he kind of gave me that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. So he upped my meds, sent me away for another, you know, 2 months. So I call the office, I come back again and I'm like, "Listen, I'm really sick. It's to the point where when I drink, like my water comes back up. If I go if I go to take a pill, my pills come back up. Like I'm not eating a lot and I'm losing even more weight because my food comes back up." So he agreed to do a scope begrudgingly because he told me there was nothing wrong with me. And so he scoped me and I woke up and they move you into that other patient room and the doctor said, "Well, we found something. Can't really tell what it is. But I think we need to do an internal ultrasonic scope, which we can't do here. I'll have to send you to the hospital."
Wow.
And so of course I hear we found something and I just assume I have cancer. Mm. And so I go home and I'm all freaking out and I'm basically planning my funeral. I'm planning my husband's future marriage to a new wife because there's no way he can do this on his own. I'm planning freezer meals. Like I've got it in my head that, you know, I've got cancer. And so I go 2 weeks later for this ultrasonic scope. And before I even woke up, the doctor told my husband, so your wife has an esophageal tumor and I can no longer be her doctor. I am not a surgeon. I don't deal with this. So good luck to the two of you, but you need to consult an oncologist and left.
Oh, wow.
He never even spoke to me, never saw me. I hadn't even woken up yet. So I wake up and my husband has to tell me, "You have a tumor, in your esophagus." And so after that, we, searched out oncologists and we found, one who was at Moffitt, which is a cancer center about an hour and a half from where we are. And he actually started taking rounds in our local hospital, which was mm-hmm. very strange because we live in a very tiny little town. And so I got connected with him and I was like the second patient in his office because he had just moved to our town. So I went in, we saw him and he was, basically said, "Look, you're 34. This is not a tumor we ever rarely see in women, and we never see it in young people.
Wow.
Don't know why you have this, but what I can tell you is you have to get your affairs in order. You have a couple of weeks and, you know," because we thought, "Oh, well, can we wait a few months? We need to get childcare in order." And he basically was like, "Look, I don't know if you have cancer or not, but until I go in and crack you open, I don't know what I'm looking at. So wow. I'll give you about 4 weeks tops, get your affairs in order." And I didn't like that word, right? Get your mm-hmm. affairs in order. I was like, "Oh, this is terrible." So at that point I really knew I was dying. I was like,
golly,
at home
yeah.
Googling everything, you know, which is the worst thing that anybody can do when they find out that they have, you know, a tumor or something. It's like, do not go to WebMD ever. So
yeah, that's bad place to go for anything.
Yeah, you just automatically you're dying of everything. So
it's horrible. I've had terrible experiences with
yeah,
that.
It's not a good idea. I mean, I get why it exists, but it's terrible because of course he tells me what he thinks I have and I go home and Google it and it's like, well, if I have this type of cancer, it's a 5% survival rate. So I just panicked. So of course, you know, we get home and we're going through all of this and it was a really long 4 weeks. It was like the longest 4 weeks of my life because at that point then I assumed my unhappiness and my, you know, depression and my inability to find happiness with my family and my work life and my home life, you know, I basically wished myself this, you know, mm-hmm. issue. And so it was a disaster. And so, we go in, he cracks me open and, lo and behold, the tumor had done quite a bit of damage to my esophagus, which he was able to repair. He had to do some tricky things in there, but lo and behold, I did not have cancer. The tumor mm-hmm. was not malignant. So the surgery, there were two other surgeries after this, but this first one did exactly what it was supposed to do. And I woke up and my husband looked at me and he's like, you don't have cancer. Like you're going to survive. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. Like I had never been so happy to be alive. And I looked at him and I said, I have to do something. And he said, what? And I said, I don't know. And then I passed back out. And I was in the hospital for about 6 days. It was a pretty long recovery. It was a pretty awful recovery because I cannot take pain medication. I don't tolerate it. So I had an open, like a open chest surgery and I got to take mm-hmm. liquid Tylenol. So it was a long recovery. But while I was recovering, I was really thinking about what I wanted to do with my life. What do mm-hmm. I want to do with my life? And I realized I was so tired of seeing perfect parenting displayed on social media. And I said, what if I were to write about parenting the way I see it? What if I mm-hmm. were to write about parenting the way I think the majority of people parent? Would people read it? Would people want to be involved in that conversation? And so I said to my husband, I'm going to start a blog. And he said, yeah, okay, you're going to start a blog. I said, no, I really, really am. Because I had said this before and never gone through with it. Mm-hmm. I even had bought the name That's Inappropriate and never did anything with the website. And so I said to him, no, like I have a new lease on life. I'm going to do this. Yeah, okay. So I started the blog in October of 2014. My surgery was in August. So I recovered from August to October. And in October, I said, I'm going to do this. It's time. So I started writing. And of course, nobody read it, mm-hmm. but my family members begrudgingly. And I thought, you know, maybe this is silly. Maybe this isn't a smart idea. And then somebody was like, well, get a Facebook page. Like, how is anybody going to find your blog without a Facebook page? And I said, oh, that's a really good idea. Why didn't I think of that? Like maybe I should put this on Facebook. And so I started moving what I was writing onto Facebook. And then they were like, oh, get a Twitter. And I've to this day never figured out Twitter, but I was like, okay, we'll get a Twitter. And then they were like, get a YouTube channel. I'm like, why would I do that? I don't even have videos. And they go, well, you might make videos someday. So I said, okay. So I got a YouTube channel, which sat there with nothing on it for over a year. But slowly I started to find this little community on Facebook of people who were saying, oh my gosh, yes, that's my life. That's the daily struggle that I go through. And I had always wanted to be on SNL when I was a kid. Like that was my favorite TV show. I loved the writing of it back in the early 90s and mid 90s. I loved everything about it. And I thought to myself, what if I found a way to tell jokes like and doing what I'm doing in the parenting space. And so I tried stand-up. And stand-up comedy is scary.
Yes.
And exhilarating all at the same time. And it's kind of like being thrown into the streets naked and then be like, tell a joke. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, okay. But I actually really loved it. And then I quickly realized, oh, I can't go tell jokes in bars on a Tuesday night I'm a mom. Like I have things that I have to do. And my husband was not super keen on me doing that either, because he was like, you can't come home at 2 a.m. And then how are we supposed to do this? And I was like, you know, you're right. I said, but I love to tell jokes. And he's like, well, figure out another way to tell jokes. And I don't know that he meant this, but I figured out a different way to tell jokes. I started taking what I was writing and turning them into videos, because I also saw the way Facebook was promoting videos. In 2016, there was just this flood of video onto Facebook. And I was like, oh my gosh, people are just, and it wasn't produced video either. It was just amazing to see so many people putting video onto Facebook. And I was like, the engagement and the viewership and the reach is so much more than the written word now. And it was confusing, but at the same time, it was kind of like, oh, if I can figure out how to make videos, maybe this is what I was supposed to be doing, you know? And so the first video that I had go viral was in May of 2016. It was my Mother's Day video. And it was just this video where my husband decided that he was going to go on a golf weekend. And it was Mother's Day weekend.
I remember that.
And I was like, who does that? Like, who goes the week of Mother's Day and then like decides they're going to go golfing? And so I decided that at first I was like, well, I'm going to write about this. And then after I wrote it, I was like, no, I think this is a video. I think I should turn this into a video, because I was kind of angry. And I was also kind of laughing, because I was like, this is real life. Like, I bet there are other women out there whose husbands decided the week of Mother's Day to go freaking golfing. Like, I bet these idiots decided this was a good idea. And so I made this video and I sent it to my husband, who, because he wasn't home, and he goes, that video is terrible. Nobody is going to watch that. And I go, well, what do you mean it's terrible? And he goes, well, first of all, the quality isn't really great. And I said, well, I'm shooting it on my MacBook computer. Like, no, it's not great quality. I said, but the video is funny, right? And he's like, not to me. I don't think this is funny. And I go, but it's what I want for Mother's Day. And he's like, well, but it kind of sounds like you don't want to be with us or the kids or anything on Mother's Day. And I said, that's exactly what I want. I want to be left the hell alone. I don't want to be bothered or touched or asked for anything. If I get one day off a year, that's what I want. And he goes, well, put it up, but nobody's going to watch it. I said, okay. So I put the video up, and a couple of hours later, I texted him and I said, hey, this video has like 10,000 views, which was insane, because nothing I had posted up to that point had more than a couple hundred views. And he goes, that's crazy. And I go, I know, right? Like 10,000 views, like that's insane. And the comments were crazy. Either you loved it or you hated it. And when I mean hated it, I mean, I was having people message me at that point telling me that I was the worst person on the planet. So it was just like, either you were like, hell yes, this is exactly what I want, or you are the worst mother on the planet. And so I thought to myself, that's really interesting how polarizing me telling people what I wanted for Mother's Day was. And throughout, like I was just glued to my phone at that point. I couldn't stop looking at the views just going up. And then that evening, I called him and I was like, this thing has like almost 200,000 views. This is crazy. And he's like, I know, it's insane. He goes, I'm going to come home. So I said, okay, come home. And he goes, I think we're going to call it early here at the thing. I'm going to come home tomorrow, which was the day before Mother's Day. He goes, cause this is crazy. Like, I can't believe this is happening. Well, overnight it just exploded. And by that morning I woke up and it had 1 million views. Wow. And I was like, holy crap. Like, and so then I'm Googling what's viral, right? Because now I'm like, is this what a viral video is? Like, I have no idea. Well, by the end of the weekend, it had something like 10 million views by the end of Mother's Day weekend. Mm-hmm. It was everywhere. Every news station was playing it. Every radio station was playing it. Everybody was stealing it online and re-uploading it and sharing it. And I was just sitting there going, holy crap. So video is where it's at. Like, I have to be able to take the written word, do what I did, smash it together, and maybe people will watch this. But what was even more insane was I had 3,000 followers on Facebook the day that that video was uploaded. At the end of the month of May, I had 60,000. And they all came in from that video, right? Like there was no other way people were, it was just this video. And so at that point, my husband was like, I think you should make more videos.
Now he's on board at this point.
He was on board with videos, but he still said, and to this day, he'll tell you, you know, those were not quality videos. Production was low. And I was like, of course production was low. Like that's what we had, right? Like we didn't know, sure. You know, what we were doing. I still don't know what I'm doing 9 times out of 10, but if I think it's funny or if I think that somebody else might be feeling that way, that's what I want to talk about. That's what I want to touch on. And from that, from May of 2016, moving forward, I've always had that at the center of why I make a video, why I do what I do. I don't want parents to feel isolated or alone or like they're failing. We need to find the wins every day. And from that moment, I've made it my job, the reason why I do what I do, to reach out, talk to, communicate with everybody that's on the page. If they message me, if they email me, whatever they do, so that I can let them know, hey, you're not alone. It's okay. We're all muddling through this. This is what actual parenting looks like versus perfect Pinterest parenting or perfect, you know, whatever you see out there. Like that's not the reality. You know, this is the reality and you're doing a good job. So that's why we do it.
So it's safe to say that you were an overnight success that took several years to build a brand.
Yeah, there you go. I do. I hate when people are like, oh, well, you just had that one video and went viral and it was so easy. And it's like, no. Like it took a long time. And there's definitely a recipe, if you will, to finding out what's going to work. Mm-hmm. But I truly do believe that. Because somebody asked me, they were like, how much ad money did you put behind your video? And I'm like, I don't put a single penny behind any of my videos. If it's not going to take off organically, it wasn't meant to work in that sense. So I'm not going to pay to promote these things. And somebody was like, well, you're doing it all wrong. And I was like, well, I don't think so. I think if something is funny and relatable, people are going to share it. Whether you're putting... You know what I'm saying? So
Of course.
That's my personal opinion on it.
Well, I think that's true. And that's kind of a joke that we have in the podcasting community is that, you know, somebody like Jordan Harbinger, who was an overnight success that took 12 years to build a brand. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can necessarily be an overnight success. I mean, it might happen to some, but clearly you have put time and effort into what you do. And I think you nailed it on the head. There is a recipe to make it work. And I've actually even read and talked to other guests who sort of specialize in marketing. And they will say when you start paying to promote things, that can actually hurt you if you don't continue to pay that money because it will throttle your reach. I think Instagram and Facebook and all of that, I don't think those ads are bad. But if you're paying to drive your traffic just solely based on that, you know, you have a good point. Organically, it's probably going to be more successful than if you paid to do it. Have you ever considered maybe putting together a class or training for people who want to start a YouTube channel or build an Instagram following? Has that ever crossed your mind? Because I think you would do really well at it.
Well, we've actually tried it. And we, cause I used to be a teacher.
Okay.
So I do love to teach. And I love to talk about this topic specifically because it's the first time in my life that I've felt like the duck in water, right? Like, mm-hmm. Not that I get it, but just that when there's no roadmap and you have to make the roadmap, you have to forge the path. You do pick things up as you go and you do learn different things. And I'm a true believer now, because my husband has basically burnt this into my brain. You do have to have a schedule. You do have to have a post schedule so that you are consistently posting at specific times when people are on, when they're expecting you, and you have to show up and you have to do it every day. I was very sporadic in the beginning. I was churning out 3-4 videos a week. a week. I was giving brand new content 3 to 4 times a week. And after a year, I looked at my husband and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so burnt out. Like, I don't think I could ever make another video again. And he's like, well, you need to get yourself together and you need, because you're going to have to make another video. So he's like, so we have to get you on a schedule. So, because I am the opposite of organized, but my husband is very organized and he's meticulous and he's a perfectionist. So the two of us are just complete polar opposites. I'm like, put some duct tape on it. It's fine. It'll work. Like, just slap it together. It doesn't matter. Whereas he will spend hours looking at an image and being like, there's something about this I don't like. And I'm looking at him saying, you're what I don't like about this. Hurry it up. Like, we need to finish this. So if I didn't have him, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing because he keeps me organized. He keeps me, you know, because my head is way up in the clouds and I'm thinking about all of this creative crap that, you know, I think is really important. And you need both of it in order for it to work. Otherwise, it's I don't think everybody can do everything all of the time well. That's when I'm struggling, is when I won't give up some of the, you know, control. And it's like, okay, I need your help, you know, help me. So yes, the answer is yes. I totally think that I would do that in the future. It's just a matter of figuring out how it will work. What I've been doing is going to conferences and teaching on specific topics. So I'll be at Mom 2.0 in Austin in April. And I will be talking about and teaching on the topic of live streaming. And then I have, I will also go to conferences and do speaking arrangements. I'm going to one in Iowa, the Bomb Mom Getaway, and I'll be talking a little bit about that. And then the rest of my time is filled up with, obviously creating content, but then I'm doing, some live shows, comedy shows and things like that.
Well, if you ever come to the Bay Area, let me know, because I think it would be awesome to check that out. I wanted to ask you, so at this point, knowing now what you know then, what would you have done differently, if anything at all? Or maybe what advice would you give to somebody who's wanting to try and build a brand, something that is sustainable?
Oh, yeah. Jeez Louise. So first off, whatever it is that you're attempting to sell, because we're all trying to sell something, right? Like I am my brand. I am selling me. Like, you have to buy into this or it does not work. You need to truly believe in your why. I never get as, is it Simon Sinek? Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, you okay. are. Yes.
So my husband showed me that his why video, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And he was like, you need to have a why. And I'm like, I have a why. And he's like, what's your why? And I'm like, I know what my why is. And he's like, so tell me. And I'm like, all right, I'll tell you in a minute. And then he was like, okay, I need a mission and a vision statement for you. And I'm like, this is boring and stupid and I don't want to do it. And he's like, but if you don't know your mission and your vision and your why, we can never actually turn this into something that is going to be a sustainable business. He goes, it's just a hobby. And I hated when he said that, because I was like, do you know how many hours I put into this? This is not a hobby. This is work. This is important. And he's like, well, then give me a why. And now that I have my why, which every single person who wants to do this needs, no matter what business you're in, or no matter what it is that you're attempting to do, you need to have a why. So my why is very clear. It's very, very distinct. I do not want parents to feel isolated and alone in this journey. Parenting is tough. You are in the trenches for a very long time and you need to find community. That's why I do what I do. I do not want parents to feel like a failure. So how do I do it? I do it with comedy. I do it with relatability and rawness and reality. And then, you know, my vessels, obviously, I write, I use video, I do live shows now. And so there are various ways that we bring it all together. So what you have to do, there's a million different things that you have to do, but you have to really be true to that as a starting point and build upon it piece by piece, day by day. It takes a long time. My friend Tiffany from Juggling the Jenkins, who I do my podcast with, she was one of those more overnight success stories where it was truly very quickly for her. She shot a couple of videos, put them up, and within a few months, she started gaining followers at an a pace I've never seen on Facebook. She's been at this. I've been at this game 5 years. She's been at this game 2 years, and she has over 2.5 million followers on Facebook.
Wow.
She is, it was there. So there are times when that happens. Now, she is the exact person that you see on her Facebook page. When you meet her in person, when you listen to her on our podcast, she is through and through. That's Tiffany. She is telling her story. Her why is very specific. She wants to help people who were addicted to drugs and want to come out the other end, and then talks about how parenting has changed her life and given her a purpose. And it's fantastic. And just watching her do her thing is amazing. It brings you joy. So when you can figure out why, you know, you're doing what you're doing, how it can help others, it really is it really helps things take off. And I think that's what happened with that first video. I was exactly who I was, and I had no apology for it. And I said, this is what I want for Mother's Day, to be left the hell alone. It resonated with people. From that moment, I kind of took all of the things that my husband was saying about really honing in on your why and your and how and what you need to do. And then after that, we looked at this as, yeah, this has the potential to be a business and it can do some really great things. What do we want to do next? How do we do mm-hmm. this? And I mean, I'm a workaholic. I love what I get to do every single day. The fact that we call it work, I have to giggle because I love it so much that it's not work. Mm-hmm. There's lots of late nights, lots of hours that I'm putting in that people don't see. You know, on just Facebook, because people will write to me and they'll say, you make a video a week and you think you're something special, huh? And it's like, well, I do way more than make one video a week. I'm working on my second book. I have live tours. I travel. I have a private community called the Hot Mess Express where we're in and we're talking with moms, and we have some single dads every day who are, you know, we're a community, we're a tribe. We do so many different things, and we do it because of, like I said, we don't want anybody to feel alone. We want everybody to know we've got your back. What you're feeling is natural and normal. And, you know, I always love my kids. I don't always like them. I always love my husband. I don't always like him. And the feeling is most likely mutual. You know, it's tough. Marriage and parenting are the two toughest jobs on the planet. They both require a ton of work and perseverance, and it's not easy. A lot of it is super difficult, and you have to be able to, you know, sometimes there are periods of our marriage that just sucked. There were a couple of years where I thought, if he doesn't figure out soon what I need and what we need to do, this is not going to work. And part of it was my fault because I wasn't telling him specifically. It was this whole passive aggressive leaving hints thing. And the other part of it was just his inability to see that I needed help. I was drowning in the housework and in the care of the kids and working full time and doing this. Cause while I was working full time, I was building the blog. And I finally just looked at him and I was like, you know, pitch in or get out, man. Like, I can't do this anymore. And I was amazed at how shocked he looked. He didn't know. He did not know that I was struggling. He thought I had it together. And that's when I knew, like, oh my gosh, how many of us women are out there pretending to have it all together when we don't have anything together?
Yeah, I tell you, you've built something that is so special and so unique. And I think it's amazing. I want to shift gears here and ask you, I imagine when you go out, you probably have some kind of recognition. People know who you are and your kids and your family. How do your children view all of this? Mommy's famous, daddy, you know, comes along. Everybody wants your attention and your time. How have you managed this to protect your children and just kind of keep that professional line there? If that question makes sense, between what you're doing all over social media and then when you actually go into public?
Well, we live in a really small town, so most people know me just because they know me. So that's okay. Not something that really, now I'll definitely will be at Target or Publix or something and people will be like, oh my gosh, I heard you three aisles over because I'm so loud. And they're like, I knew your voice. And so then I'll introduce myself and, you know, my kids will, they just shrug their shoulders and they're like, oh, she's a follower, huh? And it's like, yeah, she follows the blog. So it's not really a big deal. I think it kind of freaked out my kids when we were in a different state and people stopped us. We went to Canada and we were in Niagara Falls and somebody stopped us. And then my daughter looked at me and she goes, Mom, we're not in Florida anymore. How does anybody know you here? And I was like, well, the internet's a big place. And so she, and then it was, you know, and that kind of was like this, I think an aha moment for her that it was like, oh, and so then I really made it. It's very important that my kids understand the why of what I do and why when I leave them, I'm doing this because I feel very passionate about it and it's very important, but that's the only reason I'm going to leave my kids is because I'm passionate about something and it's important that I do it. I want them to understand that I'm not leaving. I wouldn't leave you for something that wasn't important, you know, and they've also had to learn that self-care is important. And so if mom wants to go and have two nights away with her girlfriends and do a girls trip, for some reason, like that's also important. Like you have to know, like it's, you know, we're people outside of being your parents. And so as they get older, I think they understand more and more about that. I think my daughter out of my three kids, I'm worried is the one who has the social media bug because I'll catch her doing unboxings.
Oh, wow.
With to nothing, right? Because she's not allowed, she doesn't have any social media channels. She doesn't have a phone that's connected to anything. She has my old phone, which she can record videos on, but it doesn't have internet access. So I'll see her recording herself and she'll be like, hey guys, it's Sophia. And we just bought this craft box. And I'm just going, oh my gosh, like what is happening? And at 10, she'll be 10 next month. She's asked for a YouTube channel. She's like, I'm going to be 10. I want a YouTube channel. And as much fun as I think as it would be for her to do that, I don't know how I could protect her if I let her out onto social media. Because even if there was no commenting allowed or this or that, YouTube is a mean place, man.
Sure.
My YouTube channel, although I laugh because I think it's hilarious, the comments I get on YouTube are the most fierce and disgusting that I get anywhere on social media. YouTube is the one that's just like, these people will just come and say the most awful things about you, about your kids. Because I do record things with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they will say terrible things. And you know, I'm 38. It's cool. You want to say mean things about me? It's totally fine. But I don't want you saying mean things about my 10-year-old. So I haven't figured that out yet. I don't have an answer for that in the sense of, you know, what's going to happen as they come of this age. Even my 13-year-old does not have social media. So I don't know. I've let him, he has a phone because he walks to school. So I can call him, but I mean, he doesn't have like a Facebook or an Instagram or anything yet. So and he's not asked for one. He has no interest.
Well, that's good, right? That way, you know, they're protected to a degree.
Yeah.
From things that can be mean and just be really difficult to deal with, I think, especially as a mom, a family who has a level of celebrity. But that's great. It sounds like they've got it under control. You know, they don't get horribly bothered. And maybe, you know, the one child, she'll follow in mom's footsteps and build a brand as well.
I think if I let her have a YouTube channel, she would have more subscribers than I do in maybe a month. I could tell you because she has this personality that just fills the room and she's a diva, you know, at 10, she's just so opposite of me with wanting to have her hair done all the time. And she wants to play with makeup and she wants to be dressed. And so it's so funny. I get such a kick out of watching her because she'll tell me all the time, Mom, if you would just get dressed. And it's like, yes, honey, if I would just get dressed, what? She's like, well, you might feel better. And I'm like, do you think so? And she's like, I think so. so. And so I laugh, you know, I have to laugh because obviously we have much different personalities in that respect. But at the same time, she, I think she has this bug that I have. And at some point, I'm sure I'm going to, my husband and I have talked quite a few times and we'll have to make a decision on it. But you can't shield them forever. People will mm-hmm. say mean things. It happens. I think you just have to prepare them for their reaction, because the one thing that I use over and over again in my parenting is, you know, what do you control? I'll ask my children, what do you have control of? And their response is myself. I say, okay, so you can't control the things other people say about you, the actions that they have, but you can control your own. Yes. Okay. So how are you going to feel about this? How do you feel about this girl? Because mean girls exist and they're awful. And in elementary school and middle school, it's amazing how mean they can be. And I'll ask my daughter, well, what can you do about this? What, you know, what, how can we deal with this? Because we can't control what this girl said. You can only control your reaction to what she said. And so that's how we kind of muddle through it and deal with it, because puberty sucks. And the end of elementary and all of middle school is very awkward and odd. And going through it with my son has sort of prepared me for what will happen with my daughter. But that's, I think it's just a whole different game with girls and boys.
Wow.
Girls are mean.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We'll just take that quote. That'll be our mantra. Yeah. Well, thank you, Meredith, so much for joining me and just sharing your story and really providing some great advice for our listeners and anybody who really wants to build a brand and just put themselves out there. And the fact that you have to treat it like a business. That's the bottom line, I think, mm-hmm. because if you don't, you just have a hobby, as you said, and that's cool if that's what you want to do. But if you want to make something sustainable and you want it to be successful, make an income off of it, I imagine it takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. One last question. What would be one piece of advice that you could give to somebody who is maybe stuck and wanting to start something? What would you say to them if they came to you and asked for some advice?
Well, so the newest craze right now is that Marie Kondo and the tidying mm-hmm. up, right? So the one thing that she says that I agree with her, because I binged her whole TV show in like a 2-night span. Does this spark joy for you? So what is it that you're doing that just brings you an unbelievable amount of joy? If you can find a way to shape that with your why, and turn that into something sustainable, then you've got something there. But it has to spark you joy. Like, you really have to feel it in every part of your being. And for me, I don't think my husband understood that until he saw me at a book signing a couple of years ago. And he was like, I can't believe how many different kinds of moms there were that came to your book signing. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, all of these moms were from different backgrounds, different places. Some of them drove from 6 hours away to meet you. Other people were right down the street. He goes, it was just very weird for me to watch all of these women. And they all said the same thing. They all said, I so relate to you. And he said, a lot of these women didn't look anything like you. How could they relate to you? And I said, because we're all kind of going through the same thing, no matter what economic status we live, or what race we are, or how old we are. We're moms, we're women, we're wives, or divorced women, or whatever, single parents. And we're all kind of trucking through the trenches. And it's much better to do it with somebody than to have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. And so when he saw that, he said, I just, you know, the light bulb went off for me. And I realized, this is so much more. And he goes, I want to help you with this. I really, really, really want to help you with this. And he was helping me before, but I don't think he really got it. And after that, he got it. And he just, it's been so much easier for me because I have that full support. And so I would just say, like, if you're passionate, if there is a will, there is a way. So you can make this work, but it will absolutely not be easy. I have cried on the floor in the fetal position of my closet many a time trying to figure out how to make things work, what, you know, but I knew, and I've quit, I don't know, 10 times along the way, forget it, I'm not doing this anymore, this is stupid. And I could never quit. I could never quit. I'd always come back. I'd hide in the closet, posting on Facebook. My husband's like, I thought you quit. Yeah, I quit last week. I'm back. So you just got to stick with it and you got to be ready because it's a struggle.
Wow. Well, thank you so much again, Meredith. And your podcast can be heard everywhere. Mm-hmm. Your book, Scoop the Poop, funny, the poop. Love it, can be found pretty much anywhere you get books. And I will, all your information, where can people find you?
Oh, obviously, that's inappropriate on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, over on YouTube. The podcast is on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify now. It's called Take It or Leave It, an advice-ish podcast for parents. I always, when anybody asks me for advice, I always say it's advice-ish. I am not a professional at anything. So, be wary. I'm just basically telling you what I would do, and that potentially could get you in trouble. So, just know that before you go and take any of my advice-ish stuff. But I do appreciate you having me on. I love podcasts. They're just, I just love podcasting and listening to people's podcasts. It's just, there's so much information out there and there's so many great people doing podcasts. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you again, Meredith, for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And thank you to all of our loyal listeners for being a part and joining in every episode that we release. Thank you so much. Until next time, let somebody know that you love them and let them know that you care. Have a great week, and we'll be back soon with more amazing episodes here at the Open Mic Podcast.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.